Welcome to Speak for Yourself from the Crib. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley, Speak for Yourself, presented to you by Hyundai. All right, we have a spectacular show planned for you today on this wonderful hump day, Wednesday. All right, we're having some technical difficulties with Marcellus's camera. You're going to have to bear with us. I think he'll join us by the phone or by Skype. But we're also going to be joined from the crib by Mark Slareth. We're going to go out to Denver in this opening segment. We're going to talk about Tom Brady. But stick around. We got some other good stuff for you planned in the show. Tyrann Mathieu is going to join us. He's going to pull up and we'll do an interview with him. And then I'm going to explain to you why I don't have a problem with athletes working out. But let's begin with Tom Brady's incredible more than 2-hour interview with Howard Stern. Yes, that Howard Stern, the shock jock, the king of all radio, the king of all media. Tom Brady and Howard Stern went back and forth for more than 2 hours this morning, and Tom Brady said a couple of things that I thought we hadn't really heard from him that I thought were fascinating, particularly about his wife Giselle. We'll get into that in a second. But the first thing that caught my attention was, to me, Tom Brady put to bed any concerns I have about him having a problem with Bill Belichick. I thought Tom gave a terrific answer about his relationship with Bill Belichick and where they were at after 20 years. Take a listen.
I think he has a lot of loyalty, and I think he and I have had a lot of conversations that nobody's ever been privy to. And nor should they be, that so many wrong assumptions were made about our relationship or about how he felt about me. I know genuinely how he feels about me. Now, I'm not going to respond to every rumor or assumption that's made, other than what his responsibility as coach is to try to get the best player for the team, not only in the short term, but in the long term as well. I got into uncharted territory as an athlete because I started to break the mold of what, you know, so many other athletes had experienced. So I got to a point where I was old. I was an older athlete, and he started to plan for the future, which is right. What his responsibility is. And I don't fault him for that. I mean, that's what he should be doing. That's what every coach should be doing.
I think it's a terrific answer. I've gone back and forth on how I felt Tom Brady felt about Bill Belichick. But now I am convinced this is a very amicable divorce. This is a couple that has raised their kids. The kids are out of their house, and they just decided in their glory years they're going to go their separate ways. Marcellus, how did you hear Brady's comments about Belichick and their relationship?
I thought it was the perfect response and in alignment to what I've been thinking about their relationship all along. I think a lot of people are so anxious thinking about the 21st year Tom Brady could have had as a Patriot and not respecting the blessing of 20 years as a New England Patriot. And I'm glad that Tom Brady came out and actually articulated that, look, I was focused on trying to do something that hasn't been done. And that put us in our uncharted territory. And that put Belichick in a precarious position where what do you do in terms of foundation laying and future building with a roster when you have a guy who's going to turn 43 at the quarterback position. And I think that Tom Brady basically said, we have some things in our treasure chest that are protected and secret. And that's not for the world to understand or hear or view. But on the surface level, know that I still have aspirations that have grown beyond what the New England Patriots expectations are for this roster and for me in this position. So I love what Tom Brady said, just in alignment to what you should when you're in that position. Don't let your fire die because someone else is thinking differently and having different plans.
Mark?
I think when it comes to Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, I think like any marriage, you know, there are going to be times where you disagree, where you have arguments, where, you know, you don't see eye to eye. But the bottom line is you have to find a way to come together. You have to find a way to basically be for one another and overcome those things. And I think that's exactly what this is. It's kind of a marriage relationship. And they've been doing this for 20 years, better than anybody else has done it. They understand that it is time to move along. It's time to separate for them. And yeah, I'm okay with that. I understand the process. And anybody who has been coached, especially at this level, there are times where you have this mutual respect and love for your coach and also hatred at the same time. I was coached by one of the greatest ever in Alex Gibbs, and I loved him. I care for him to this day. He was one of the greatest coaches, one of the greatest mentors, one of the greatest teachers that I've ever had. I also hated his guts at times, absolutely hated him. But that was the relationship we had, and I think there is a love-hate relationship with Bill Belichick and Tom Brady as well, and I think most of it is love, but there are things that, you know, they don't see eye to eye on, and I totally understand you've got a plan for your future as a head coach. You've got to move on. And I also think there's a part of that where Bill Belichick also wants to see what the future looks like without Tom Brady. So that's where we are right now. And I totally understand that answer. And I respect it.
For me, I don't think this is about, hey, I want to see what life is like after Tom Brady. I think it's totally driven by Belichick just saying, the guy is going to be 43. I want a young quarterback. That's what's best for the New England Patriots. It's not about doing things without Tom Brady as much as if I'm the CEO of this football team, if it's my vision, the best way to move the franchise forward is without our 43-year-old quarterback. And we know he's been great, but the expiration date in Bill Belichick's mind has been reached, and it's time to move on. It's not personal. It's just business and a vision. Marcellus, you agree or no?
I agree with you, big dog. Think about it. Like, if you want to look at it in terms of the total scope of the NFL for every single player out there, there's always the equation and balancing act between the economic and your age. We look at a running back who could have a career year when he's 29. And when you have a career year, it's pretty hard to follow that up. And then when he's 30, he doesn't follow that up. And all of a sudden, what kicks in? Age. They start to whisper, oh, he's 30 now. Well, this guy is 42. So no matter what he goes out there and does, the economics are a factor. But more importantly, his age. You can't invest aggressively in someone that age. So just like the stock market, if you are up in age, you're not going to be aggressive because you have to be conservative because you only have so much time left. When you're younger, you have time and runway and you have those moments to play with, then you can be more aggressive. This is just simple life lesson. Belichick's like, you're too close to the end of your road. There are so much more football behind you than in front of you. So I can't look at you and put you on a roster that was trying to win now with a good defense and special teams. So it just makes total sense.
All right, let's move on to what I thought was the actual most fascinating piece of this two-hour interview, more than two-hour interview with Howard Stern. Tom Brady opened up about his relationship with Gisele Bündchen in a way that I'm not sure if we've heard any athlete while still in his career talk about his marriage and relationship this way. Take a listen to what he said when talking about Gisele and their marriage and what happened a couple of years ago.
There was, you know, a couple of years ago, he didn't feel like I was doing my part for the family, you know, and she felt like I would play football all season and she would take care of the house. And then all of a sudden when the season would end, I'd be like, great, let me get into all my other business activities. Let me get into, you know, my football training. And she's sitting there going, well, when are you going to do things for the house? When are you going to take the kids to school and do that? Right. And that was a big part of our marriage that I had to like check myself, because she's like, I have goals and dreams too. So 2 years ago, as it related to even football for me, I had to make a big transition in my life to say, I can't do all the things that I wanted to do for football like I used to. I need, you know, I got to take care of things in my family, because my family, the situation wasn't great. She wasn't satisfied with our marriage. So
yeah,
I needed
huge.
To make a change in that.
All right, you can catch the entire Tom Brady interview on the Howard Stern Show on demand on SiriusXM. You guys are married. You've got successful families you've built. You're the experts on this. Marcellus, your reaction to what Tom Brady said this morning about his relationship with Giselle.
It was fascinating. And also, it was common sense and common understanding if you've been in that locker room and went through that evolution and growth as a player. If you think about it, when you first get in the game, when you're a player, football has a grip on you and you have a grip on football. But then you meet someone and you get married, you have kids, and all of a sudden that grip starts to loosen and the grip starts to tighten in terms of family. And we all know that football has a finite amount of time in terms of you cashing in and making the most of your career. You can't do it forever, but your family will be there forever. So this is a really unique situation in terms of Tom Brady and Giselle, because they both look at their careers in football windows. Think about it. She's a supermodel. So her looks and what she presents is going to change over time, and that may affect her career. She may not look the same. So she's thinking about cashing in on her opportunity at the younger age, just like the Tom Brady is thinking about cashing in on his opportunity at a younger age between his 20s and 40s. So it's interesting. They're both were robbing their family in terms of respecting their careers. And you have to have that balance in that. And I think that he came to that understanding that I might have to take a little off the fastball in football to give a little more to the family. So that dynamic was interesting to hear them say it, because these are two high-level people who really are thinking almost with a similar football mindset.
It is so interesting, because obviously it's about priorities. Where are your priorities? Are your priorities with your family in the offseason? Are your priorities in raising your kids, being involved? You know, a couple of years ago, I quit watching the Hall of Fame induction speeches because I heard so many people say, oh, you know, Daddy, sorry you didn't have time with you, but I was doing football. And I thought to myself, hey, nobody was busier than me rehabbing and doing all the things I did. And I coached soccer teams. I coached baseball teams. I did all those things. It was important to me. That's what my priority was. And to reprioritize your offseason when you've been so dedicated to what you do and what your craft is, I applaud Tom Brady for that, to recognize that, to have Giselle comment on that, to recognize that, to accept it, and to make the requisite changes. It shows you a lot about that marriage, a lot about that relationship, and good for him, because you do have to have those priorities, and those priorities are important. To me, to be a great football player, you have to have your faith in priority in line, and you have to have your family in alignment. And you can't be a great football player unless you've got the other priorities in alignment.
Let me ask both of you all this, because this is what I found fascinating. As someone who's leaned into career more than family, and listening to Brady say that he had to back off career-wise and lean more into family, do you think Brady, what he did a couple of years ago, plays any part in Bill Belichick saying, this is why I want a younger quarterback? Tom's in a different stage in his life. Do you think that factored it 1%, 10%, any percent into Bill Belichick's thinking, Marcellus?
Oh, certainly it did. We all know it's been on record that Bill Belichick was furious that Tom Brady consistently missed OTAs over the last few years. And I don't know if it was fully reported or everyone thought it was mainstream news, but inside that building, there was some contention because Tom Brady wasn't given the same level of public appreciation for the Patriots and the same level of public support for the Patriots in terms of the offseason. So I think that was an issue for Bill Belichick. But Tom Brady is like, hey, man, this is the seesaw, and most guys are not in the same position that he is in. Most guys are in a seesaw position where they're up while they're playing and their significant other or their wife can hold it down for them at home and keep headquarters running fluidly. But this is a situation where in this seesaw, Tom Brady and Giselle, they're both up because of their careers. Someone has to be home to hold it down, or your house turns into Nannyville. And it's just nannies running around trying to take care of your kids, and you return home one day as a stranger to your family. So this is a unique situation because they both were on the seesaw trying to be up. Someone had to hold it down, and finally they found their balance.
Yeah, I would. I don't know what percentage that is, but this goes on to what I would argue with you guys that we talked about initially was, does Bill Belichick want to do it differently? Does he want to see something different? And I think there's no question that the challenge of change is important, and it keeps you fresh. It rejuvenates you. It gets you going again. So I think there's that aspect that I'd like to see what I can do with a young quarterback. The other thing is Tom Brady, there's one way to win with Tom Brady. Bill Belichick is a former defensive coordinator. He's a defensive coach. Think about it. All the offenses that he's defending right now with the quarterbacks that can run, the zone read game, all the play action stuff that comes off the zone read game, you can't do that with Tom Brady. So all these things that he's struggling to defend around the league right now, he can't implement that in his own offense. So I think there is a desire. I think there is, that change, that ability to do something a different way than you've done it your whole life. I think that's invigorating for him. And I think that's one of the reasons he wants to move away.
One of the reasons I found this so fascinating, what Brady acknowledges here publicly, and I tell young people this all the time, because it's a myth here in America that you can have it all. And I say, no, you can't have it all. There are sacrifices you have to make in order to achieve in this society. This myth that, oh my God, you know what? We can all have these high demand jobs and everybody work overtime and everybody travel around the country and we can still have the perfect family. No, you can't. You can't have it all. And so to hear Tom Brady acknowledge, like, hey, man, I've had to back off my career in order to do what's right with my family. That's the kind of mature decision-making that adults and properly functioning adults make all the time. We need to get out of this mentality that we can have it all. No, you can't. All right, stick around. Darnell Smith is going to join us next. Darnell's question of the day, we're going to talk about... Damn, I done forgot. Speak for yourself from the crib.
It's Darnell.
That's my guy. My guy.
My question of the day.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley, back with you on this hump day. All right, it's time now for Darnell's question of the day. All right, homeboy, let's get out to your crib. You look like you're losing a little weight. What's your question of the day?
Yeah, I've been running these stairs a little bit, Whitlock, but let's move to Dallas, where Dak Prescott and Dez Bryant were among a group of players who caused a stir last week when pictures surfaced of them working out and not social distancing. Well, Dak and Dez are back at it this week, defying a stay-at-home order in Texas to go work out at a public facility in Dallas. Obviously, most of America is staying home right now because of the coronavirus. So I wanted to ask you, do you blame these guys for working out?
Not at all. Not at all. Actually, I respect the hell out of it. And I know there may be people upset with me and upset with them. But look, man, Dak Prescott has millions of dollars on the line this upcoming season, this offseason. When you're making the kind of demands he's making financially, you have to produce and you have to perform. And so if I was a young person in my 20s with the kind of opportunity that Dak Prescott has, I'm going balls to the walls. And I can't criticize him because I would be doing the exact same thing. And if I'm Dez Bryant and I want back in the league, I'm doing anything possible. And so I'm not going to sit here and be a hypocrite and say that if I were in my 20s, I wouldn't be doing the exact same thing Dak Prescott's doing. I respect the hell out of it. And, I'm someone that thinks Dak shouldn't be paid all the money he wants. But this inches me a little bit closer to, like, pay the man.
Man, I'm torn on it. So I will be a hypocrite because I'm going to talk to both of my minds, my dueling minds on this. 45-year-old me sitting in front of you guys right now is like, man, sit y'all butts at home and figure it out around the crib. You know, it's time to be MacGyver in terms of your workouts. If you got stairs, a flight of stairs, like Darnell said, run those flight of stairs. If you need to do some body workouts, you need to find a home gym if you go have that. But me at 25, when I was out there trying to make my money, trying to get that contract, DJ Quick comes to mind. If it don't make dollars, it don't make sense. And it doesn't make dollars sitting at home respecting all the coronavirus mandate right now if you're a 25-year-old like Dak Prescott, who has up to $200 million on the line if he goes out there and balls out. So this is really a difficult choice if you're talking from the perspective that we're sitting here and we can make this type of money talking on TV forever. But if you're a football player, you don't have forever. So I respect what these guys are doing.
Look, life is full of risk. No risk, no reward. Everything you do. And when you're a young person, again, I don't want to be irresponsible. I'm no coronavirus expert. I don't play a doctor on TV, any of that. But I'm just sorry. I think it would be irresponsible of Dak Prescott not to be doing everything in his power to prepare for this upcoming season. That's not greed talking. That's about a young person that has poured his life into an opportunity that he has in front of him. And so something's come that none of us could have expected or predicted. What's he supposed to do? Now, he's right at that very moment where he can reach his ultimate goal, really establish himself as the long-term franchise quarterback of the most historic franchise in all of American sports. And the coronavirus, where, again, if you look at the numbers, it just, in his mind, when he does the calculus, it's like, man, I'm not going to die from this. I'm probably not going to even get that sick from this. And as long as he's being responsible with who he interacts with after he's done working out, is he going to visit his grandmama or whomever or some old auntie or whatever? I just don't blame Dak. The people that want to criticize these guys, you know, I get where they're coming from, but let's just don't be hypocrites. If we were 25 and had poured our life into a career and we were right on the cusp of reaching not the finish line, but an important milestone, hats off to Dak, hats off to Dez Bryant, and I'm not suggesting other people be irresponsible, but I'm just looking at myself. I'm 50 some odd years old. I'm out here. I walk the streets on Sunday for 3 hours because I want to lose weight. And, you know, I walk the streets of LA. I just can't be that kind of hypocrite. I'm 50 some odd years. I should be more responsible than that. But because I have a goal that I want to achieve, I'm out here doing stuff, so I just can't criticize Dak and Dez.
Yeah, what you're talking about, and you're talking to the invincibility that you feel certainly at 25 as an athlete, and I know because I've been in that position before, where you just start to look at the risks and you start to weigh them out based on your situation and your circumstance. And I know if I were Dak Prescott, I know when I was 25, the first thing I would have heard is that we have to lock it down. But I'm like, I got to get my grind on because I got to get my money. And from that, you start to mitigate the risk. Like you said, hey, even if I contract it, the odds are I'm going to be okay from it because I'm a young, healthy athlete. So all that comes into consideration. But, you know, you have to also think that there are people not in this circumstance who are going to talk from their place, from their lens. And you just have to tune them out in this respect because this too shall pass in terms of the coronavirus. One day we will return to norm. And you imagine if you're Dak Prescott when we return to norm and you didn't work out as you could have and rolled the dice, and then you go out there and not have your best performances. That will really bite him in terms of regret. So right now he's just rolling the dice. He's like, I have to go get it. And I think everyone understands that if they were to put themselves in that position and use a little empathy.
All right, speak for yourself from the crib, presented by Hyundai. When we come back, Jim Jackson's going to join us. We're going to talk about C.J. McCollum's comment that a third of the NBA players are living paycheck to paycheck. Stick around. time to speak for yourself. Presented by Hyundai, Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. All right, let's go out to Jim Jackson's crib and bring in Jimmy Jackson to talk some NBA. This segment brought to you by Ciroc Premium Vodka from fine French grapes. All right, CJ McCollum, Portland Trailblazer guard, made some interesting comments in an interview saying that 150 of the 450 NBA players live paycheck to paycheck. He, of course, was talking about the coronavirus and what would happen if the NBA season were canceled and what kind of financial strife NBA players might endure if something happens to the NBA. 150 of 450 players, that's a third of the league. Marcellus, you buying that?
Oh, yeah, I'm buying that. Matter of fact, I would buy that it's actually higher than 33%, being real, just based on my experience, whereas every year in the league, I would get probably on average 5 phone calls from teammates who couldn't budget their entire offseason. And then usually around June, you get that call, hey, man, can you float me a little bit till we get to our real paychecks in September? So, yeah, this is a real issue. Now, I do want to dispel that this is an athlete celebrity issue. I want to dispel that myth because this is just an issue of young people making an inordinate amount of money issue. If you're in your 20s and you're throwing hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, you're not properly prepared, most guys, for that situation. From going not just head of household, head of family, and so many pulls on you, that's what the real issue is. So if you start to look at it, my grandma used to always say that the fish is going to grow to the tank, to the aquarium. So when you're making hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars and you're young, you think you're going to make it forever, you think you have forever, everyone's pulling on you, it's pretty tough to really budget that amount of money. So in a world where the average American millionaire is 57 years old, that means people have learned and build their wealth and learn from their own mistakes. It takes a long time to understand everything that comes with the power of money, and these athletes are suffering, some of them as well.
You know, Marcellus, that's a great point that you made in regards to it's not just an athlete problem. But again, because we are athletes or former athletes, it's always going to be more in the forefront. So I'm going to follow up with that. I do believe what CJ is saying is true. Maybe the numbers may be a little different. He has a pulse on the league and what's going on in today's world. And it may be more, it may be less, but it is a part of the dynamic of not just what I would say football, basketball, baseball, but all those sports in general, where especially young players have a difficult time budgeting. And to your point, Marcellus, here's the thing. People think all of a sudden that you get this money and all, but now you're smart. You got to know how to invest. Well, a couple of different things with that. One, you don't come from the background. I don't care if it's sports or somebody hits the lotto, somebody gets a really good job out of college. If you don't have the financial background and understanding how to invest, how to budget, how to save the money, how to do these things, and understand the language of finances, then you are going to struggle with an enormous amount of money at a quick period of time. I don't care if you're an athlete, if you're a regular Joe, I don't care what it is or who you are, you're not going to have the business acumen and the financial acumen to understand what's going on. You're going to make some mistakes with that. That's a part of growth. So it's always a tough dynamic, and I tell people all the time that now all of a sudden, like you said, Marcellus, you get thrown this money. Now you're making decisions for everybody. Everybody's coming to you for advice. People come to you for money. People coming for a whole bunch of things. Now all of a sudden you're the smartest guy in the room. And really what you've done is just now just transferred over and got the biggest bank account. That doesn't mean that all of a sudden you have all the answers to everything else. And that's always been a challenge, not just like you said, Marcella, for athletes, but for people, young people who come into money all of a sudden at a young age.
Both of you have made tremendous points that I agree with wholeheartedly. Jim, that last point you made about you got the guy with the most money. And we do, I think, a lot equate, oh, you got the most money, you must be the smartest person. And no, what it might mean is that you're the most talented person. You have some unique gift that my brother is smarter than me, always was. He's more responsible than me. He didn't have my gift for talking spit. He didn't have my gift for writing. He's an executive with Ford Motor Company. He can't make my money, but he's smarter than me. He's more responsible than me.
Right.
But people will consider, oh, Whitlock, he makes X amount of dollars. He must be this smart. Now, I like sports. Yeah. I know how to talk a little spit. I can write. Yeah. I have a unique gift that's put me in a position to do this. The other thing, Marcel, is to your point that you made that I just want to expound on a little bit. Once you hit that NFL, NBA lottery, you become the patriarch of your family. You become the head of your family. And then a lot of these guys, and I don't want to generalize about all of them, but a lot of these guys, they didn't have a male role model patriarch. They've never seen someone be the patriarch of their family and know how to handle that. A lot of guys come from families dominated by their mom or grandmother, and they've seen a matriarch and how they operate, not how a patriarch operates. And so I agree with you, these young people, and we can pass judgment on them. And oh, my God, they make all these awful decisions. And I would make X, Y, and Z decision if I were them. Nah, not if you were as young as them, given that much money. You felt invincible. You'd make a lot of the same decisions. And look, I'm not making excuses for these guys, but we have to deal with reality. And I just thought both of you made excellent points. Marcellus, you have more to add? Or?
Well, yeah, I just want to give everyone this illustration, because when you say head of family, I think a lot of people think nuclear family. When I say head of family, I mean aunties, uncles. I'm talking about step cousins, like people you don't even know. You are in head of everyone. And just in short, when I got drafted, my two best friends, both of them graduated the same year. We all hit the workforce together. And they went to Wall Street, two of them, and I went to the NFL. Obviously, I made more than them in the beginning stages. But you know what dynamic started to work? They learned to work off of $70,000 a year, $90,000, $110,000. As they continued to grow, they were making more money, but their lifestyle was hardening around less money than myself. Mm-hmm. So what started to happen is when they really start making that big Wall Street executive money, it was all surplus, all bonus. They had got accustomed to a $100,000 lifestyle versus me, who was accustomed to a $500,000 lifestyle. Right. And then when you hit 32, retired me, and my boys are 32 making millions like I used to, they looking at me like, okay, you're going to be good, right? And I'm like, I'm good. But trust me, like CJ is trying to illustrate, not everybody's going to be good in that dynamic.
Yep.
All right, stick around. Don't go anywhere. We got a member of the NFL All-Decade team, Kansas City Chiefs star Tyrann Mathieu, joining the show from his crib. Earth! Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib. Just Jason Whitlock here. We got some technical difficulties with Marcellus at his crib. But we're going to go out to Kansas City and visit the crib of an all-decade defensive back from the NFL, a Super Bowl champion, the defensive leader of the Kansas City Chiefs, Tyrann Mathieu. Tyrann, welcome to Speak for Yourself. Let's get right to it. Pull up and we like to ask people about their quarantine life. And so we want to know, have you binged anything on Netflix or Amazon? What have you been doing to pass the time during this quarantine?
Yeah, obviously I've been, watching a lot of TV. you know, luckily I have my kids around, so I'm able to kind of interact with them, go outside in the backyard with them, play with them. And then I got like a little mini basement that's kind of like my workout area. So I'm trying my best to stay busy, but it's hard, no doubt.
We just had a conversation about Dak Prescott and Dez Bryant. They're continuing to go out and work out together. And we've seen Lamar Jackson working out with Antonio Brown and Hollywood Brown. I don't have a problem with it. I actually support the guys that are doing it. And I know it's kind of risky. What have you been doing to kind of stay in shape beyond your basement? Or have you been just limited to your basement?
Yeah, well, obviously going in the backyard and, you know, obviously going for a jog, you know, around my neighborhood. But, you know, thanks to everybody is different. You know, obviously a lot of guys are in, you know, situations where, you know, they feel like they have to work out. They have to get that edge and, you know, make sure that they're preparing themselves for next year. And, you know, then there's guys like me who obviously is preparing for next year. But, you know, we have kids at home and, you know, I think the risk of going out and kind of getting something and bringing it back home and, you know, impacting your family or affecting your family. I think that's kind of, you know, where I'm at with it right now. So, you know, I just try my best to, you know, stay around people I've been around, you know, since this whole thing has really started.
Tyron, you have the greatest nickname perhaps in all of sports, but you kind of walked away from the Honey Badger nickname. How come?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm growing up. You know, and I feel like that name there, obviously, it'll always be with me. You know, even going back to my roots in Louisiana, you know, I think a lot of kids, you know, from Louisiana, they don't even know my first name. They just know me by the Honey Badger. But, you know, I think as I grow older, man, I get more mature in this league. You know, I just want people to know me by, you know, my first name. You know, that's Tyron.
It's been a remarkable journey. I follow you on social media. I'm very impressed by the way you present yourself and carry yourself. You're a very reflective, thoughtful person. I'm not sure if we would have thought that early on in your LSU days. What have you learned about yourself during this quarantine and spending so much time around family? Any new thoughts from Tyron Matthew coming out of this quarantine?
Yeah, well, you know, obviously I've always been, you know, the kind of guy that really consider myself a leader, not only, you know, as a football player, but, you know, even within the community. I always try to do my part there. And, you know, I think, you know, my thoughts is ever since this thing has really started, I think it's given me great perspective on, you know, the levels I want to take my foundation to, you know, the Tyron Matthew Foundation. And, you know, can I really, you know, create ways and resources to really impact people in times like this. I think we do a lot of great things throughout the year, you know, turkey giveaways and Christmas giveaways. I think a lot of players are going to, you know, want to take their foundations to the next level to really impact people, you know, in really critical situations like the times we're in right now.
You mentioned being a leader. Tyron, I don't know if you know this, but I made my bones in Kansas City. Longtime Chiefs fan, covered the Chiefs for a lot of years. When Eric Berry left, I was like, oh, my God, where are they going to get the leadership from? You stepped up and have been that leader on the defensive side. Let me ask you just a straight-up Chiefs fan question from the leader of the defense, Chris Jones, the most talented player on the defense. He's been franchise-tagged and wants a long-term contract, but the Chiefs, we got $177 in cap space. Are you concerned? Should I be concerned that somehow Chris Jones is going to wind up someplace else than in a Chiefs uniform?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think anytime you talk about a guy, you know, really of that stature, a guy that can really impact the game, you know, in ways that he can, you know, we moved him all over the defensive line last season and, you know, he really was able to really, you know, make guys around him better. And I think anytime you have a guy that not only makes people around him better, but you can see him in your long-term future, I think it's necessary to really try to pay those guys. So I hope it works out. You know, I hope me and Chris can continue being neighbors.
Oh, he's your neighbor. All right. All right. Speaking of guys that got to get paid, our quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, man, he's worth every dime. I hope they pay him $100 million. I hope they give him ownership in the franchise. For you as a defensive player, what was incredible to me in the Super Bowl, the comeback, obviously, you shut down the 49ers in the entire fourth quarter. And one of my thoughts was, as a defensive player, having Patrick Mahomes must give you so much confidence that if we get the ball back to this kid, he can create a miracle for us. We're never out of a game.
Yeah, I think really that's the luxury. And, you know, I think everybody on defense, you know, including myself, we take great pride in that, knowing that, you know, we're playing with a guy that's, you know, really transcending the position he's playing. He's really, you know, really making everybody around him better. And I think it's our job to really understand that, you know, this is his team and, you know, we got to do our best to compliment him. And I think he's one of those guys who, you know, he looks forward to having the ball in his hands and, you know, making big plays. And so I'm excited to see him continue to grow and really continue to lead us.
All right. This is obviously the most unique offseason perhaps in the history of the NFL. No OTAs. Look, it's always tough to defend a title. Guys get complacent. Guys start thinking about contracts. And it's very hard to defend a title. Do you think this offseason, the uniqueness of it, makes it easier or harder for you guys to be motivated and defend this title?
You know, I'm not really sure. But I think what I do know is, you know, we got a lot of young guys on our team, a lot of guys that really love to play football. They love to be around each other. And I think we have that chemistry. Like I mentioned, a lot of guys that's on the team that, you know, they're going to be together for the next 2 or 3 years. And I think we understand that. I think we understand the bond we have. And so really it's just a matter of us getting around each other and then just getting back to, you know, the normal routine.
All right. I know this is kind of a biased question, but who's got a better shot at defending their title, the Chiefs or your LSU Tigers?
Well, I'll probably say they know the Tigers. Obviously, it's a great program. Coach O is doing down there, you know, building those recruits, getting those guys to really buy into the tradition of, you know, playing football for LSU. I say, speaking of the Kansas City Chiefs, you know, we're a confident team. We're a confident bunch. You know, we feel like we have some of the best coaches in the National Football League. And we feel like we have some of the best players in the National Football League at most positions. So for us, you know, it's all about going out there, believing in our coaching, and then having leadership, having guys that you can really fall on when times get hard.
Tyron, thank you for the time. Really appreciate it. Enjoy some Gates barbecue during your quarantine for me. I would appreciate that. Mr. Gates, if you're watching, love you. Can't wait to see you guys again. Thank you, Tyron. All right, Uncle Jimmy,
appreciate it.
From his crib. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. All right, time now for Uncle Jimmy to go out to his crib. Had a terrific show today. Let's see if Uncle Jimmy can end it on a high note. All right, who's your big dummy of the day?
Big dummy of the day goes to the person that's going to sit up here and lie, talking about, I made my bones in Kansas City.
You ate some bones in Kansas City. Tell that right, man.
I made my bones.
Flint on me.
Hey, could you just get to Tom Brady and your thoughts on Tom Brady and his comments on Giselle?
Hey, man, look here. Let me tell y'all something, man. Uncle Jimmy told y'all what was going on in that Brady confine behind that combine a long time ago. I told y'all. Y'all didn't need Tom Brady to tell y'all that. I told y'all what was happening. I said Tom Brady did not want to be stuck in that house with Giselle and them badass kids. Now, didn't I tell y'all that? Now Tom Brady.
You said that, yes.
Hey, man, Tom Brady's been reduced to being a poster child for social distancing in his own family. I'm trying to tell you, at this rate, man, Tom Brady Brady gonna play football till he's 72 years old? I'm trying to tell you, man. Hey, man, I ain't gonna lie, man. Tom Brady can't wait for Stale to leave his ass. Why the hell you think he moved into the house in the first place?
All right, we gotta go. You're crazy. We both have Tom and GOAT status. Well deserved. The internet agrees with us. 77%. All right, we've had a great hump day. We'll see you on Thursday.
It ain't no problem.
Big Bo doing it.